Now we have our panel discussion with this, you know, following the modern style and advice also from our health experts. So we are standing instead of sitting. And this is, as you know, people sit too much. That is what is said about our current working life. And so we are trying to make a change, as we are all about to make a change in education as well. So you may stand if you like, but you have just been over having the lunch and walk back. And I would like to introduce our panel members. And I start from the very right hand there. And from your side, left-hand side, we have our counselor in education, Tiina Vihma-Porovaara from the Ministry of Education, Higher Education Unit.
Higher Education and Science Policy.
And Science Policy, thank you for the corrections. And especially interested in internationalization and international affairs, international cooperation. And then we have adjunct professor Hisayo Katsui from the University of Helsinki, and also a researcher at Åbo Academy and Abilis Foundation. And then we do have a postdoctoral researcher.
Oh, right, okay. You should have mentioned that you don't hear well enough. Okay, shall I start again? I think I'll do that. Yes. So first we have here Tiina Vihma-Porovaara. Counselor from the Ministry of Education, Higher Education Unit, and Higher Education and Science Policy, Unit. Yeah. You see, I learned. Yeah. And then also working with international affairs and international cooperation. And I think with a special interest in Chile also.
Yes.
And then we have adjunct professor Hisayo Katsui, who works at the Helsinki University and also a researcher at Åbo Academy University in Human Rights Institute and Abilis Foundation in Helsinki. And then we have Hanna Posti-Ahokas, postdoctoral researcher from the University of Helsinki, Teacher Education Department, and doctoral student Said Juma from the State University of Zanzibar, assistant lecturer or lecturer there, and also our doctoral student here at the University of Jyväskylä, and an expert in inclusive education development. And then we have Tiina Silander, who is head of the Teacher Education Department here at the University of Jyväskylä, and actively changing and reforming, certainly, our teacher education. And then we have Professor Hannu Savolainen, who works here in the Department of Education at the University of Jyväskylä. You're all welcome. And I have requested all of you to give us a very brief 5 minutes perspective to your views when it comes to quality of education by connecting research, policy and practice. And you all have different perspectives and different experiences in these issues, both from practice, research and policy perspectives. You're welcome. Tiina, would you like to start?
Well, thank you. It's not an easy task to start, but I'll try. I'll tell something about my background. It's because I come back actually in time about 30 years. I was a kindergarten teacher at the same time when I was studying in the university, and I had my own group in Helsinki, and I was working as a kindergarten teacher, and that's why I feel very strongly also towards this kind of seminars, and it's a highly of importance, of course, to our whole department, our ministry, but also personally for myself. It has happened now in the last month, actually, that we have now two important policy documents looking forward and to the future. And both of these policy documents are addressing the importance of education and the quality of education. The first one was published in the beginning of October, and it's the future orientations of Finland. It's all the ministries are working with the policy documents, the orientations, towards the coming government programme. So that, as you know, there will be parliament elections next year in spring. And this is why all the ministries had to look at those issues that they want to bring to the new government programme. And this issue was there addressed very, very highly. The other one was published yesterday, and it was the guidelines of our Research and Innovation Council. And as you know, the council is chaired by our Prime Minister. The most important ministers are there. There's representatives from universities, from research funding bodies, from industry, from unions and so forth. So it's a very, very high level organ which discusses and really wants to see the challenges and also the strengths of Finland when looking forward to, for example, 2020. So when I was reading it today in the train, when I was coming, I just tried to take all those sentences there where they were talking about knowledge. And there were so many of them. So that I couldn't put a list that, okay, this was said, this was said, this was said. But education is the core of Finnish survival. As you know, the Finnish society is now in a crisis that it hasn't been for many, many years. And education, knowledge, it is the core to our future. When thinking about the three points that were actually asked, that Elina asked me to think about, is that there is... The first one is that in Finland we have this very, very strong consensus on all political parties, on all levels of society, of the importance of education, and of education on all levels. So that when we have been travelling around the world with different ministers, for example, and just on Tuesday when we met the Minister of Chile in our ministry, the question was that... there was the question that I asked before from our Chilean colleague, that what happens when your government changes? And we say nothing changes, because it's the core of the society, the importance. It's seen that the economy of Finland lies in knowledge. So that's one of the core issues, and that's something that means also that... It has been built for about 100 years. So it's not just like changing something in a year's time or 4 years' time or 10 years' time or 50 years' time. It has been gradually growing the trust to education. But of course, this is something that is also the kind of other question is that our whole society has been and hopefully is still based on trust. And of course, it is acknowledged that the education is affecting society, economy, culture, everything. The second thing is that is also not acknowledged in all talks, in all documentation, is the what was already said earlier today, is that education is based on research. It can't be emphasized too much. It's everywhere where we go. It's everywhere. It's all in our talks. It's the core thing. And why? What we need, what we actually, what we understand with this, is said very briefly. Is of course that if it's like this, then the teachers can see the quality themselves, and they can develop their own work. As said earlier today, in their lifelong learning, as teachers, as working. And of course, something that was actually mentioned with some of the colleagues from University of Oulu and the training school of Rovaniemi, with whom I went to Chile last September, they were saying that teachers are working as teams more and more. And this is also something which has to be done. And it is also because of the research that they do together things and they they have this kind of very different approach than in many other countries. Then probably just saying that what was the core actually in the guidelines of the Innovation and Research Council guidelines today, yesterday, it was that the world is changing so rapidly that we have to be flexible and we have to adjust the methods and everything that we are doing and working on all the time so that it must be like this. But it's a dynamic environment and we have to face it, and that's why probably we have this research oriented teacher education as well. I think that was mine.
Thank you. And shall we move to Hisayo? Yes.
Okay. Very, very nice, and very nice to be here. Actually, I'm not a pedagogy oriented person. I'm my discipline is disability studies. It was established in Helsinki University only last year, and I'm the first docent in disability studies in the whole of Finland. And that's why my 5 minutes contribution in the beginning is concentrated on the issues of persons with disabilities and their right to education. And if I look at the statistics, globally, 15% of the populations are persons with disabilities. But then when it comes to the net enrollment rate of children with disabilities, it goes down to like a few percent. For example, in Ethiopia, where I was last year, it was 3%. And then even the Organization of Persons with Disabilities in Ethiopia says that it's an overestimate, because many children with disabilities are in those countries are mostly hidden at home and not included into the statistics. Mm. As many of you might know already from your own countries, if you could imagine whether you had spent your primary education in your school with children with disabilities, perhaps no. Then that tells a lot if you think that 15% should have been persons or children with disabilities. And the agenda of this disability mainstreaming has been driven by organizations of persons with disabilities and some handful of disability researchers like myself. So for us, to link the policy, practice, research is really difficult with these resources. So what we have to do is to go beyond the different kind of borders to enlarge our like-minded stakeholders, not only from the social scientists, but natural science or whatever sciences that we have around us, if we are talking about universities, or if we are talking about development, then we contact with the government, bilateral development practitioners, or multilateral development cooperation practitioners, or then goes into the really grassroots, teachers, parents, and so on. And that's actually what I do. Being the primary researcher to the current United Nations Special Rapporteur on Disability, we often have the privilege to be able to meet those world leaders in international agencies or leaders of the countries. Then we talk very strongly that we have to include persons with disabilities and learners' disabilities into education, for example. And then they just understand it properly, that of course. Hmm. But then it is just the ignorance that they just didn't have the experience of having them included, and that would make them forget about it, making an additional effort to do so. So ignorance is one thing, and then we just have to go one step further. And as Tina already mentioned, that the education has the strong standpoint that it is important for anybody. Yes, and then it has been so for long. But then it was not so for learners with disabilities. And so if we have this 100 years of tradition of having only persons without a disability in education, then making a change might require some resistance and extra effort because of the history. And about the quality of education, because there is a lot of things like physical, attitudinal, institutional barriers that you can find in the educational settings, for example, in schools, deconstructing those barriers means that the whole of the society has to change. Because like the attitude of teachers, attitude of the pupils without disabilities come not only from schools, but from outside of the schools. So the quality of education, in my opinion, means that the whole of the society would change to become more inclusive to diversities. And because Elena was asking in advance what kind of suggestions I could make from my point of view as being a disability researcher, my suggestion would be that to take a stakeholder or stakeholders around you with disabilities on board to implementation, planning, evaluation, whatever the task that you have. That would be my suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Hanna?
I look at the issue of quality from several positions. I have been trained and I have worked as a teacher here in Finland, and I have done some policy work in very international contexts. And now in my current position as a researcher, I look at the world from the academic perspective, perhaps. I view research, policy, and practice being in a dialogic relationship with each other, where each influences, informs, and benefits the other. I also believe that a lot more could be done to strengthen these interconnections in order to improve education. And maybe I do emphasize these links because of the different perspectives I have had during my career up to this point. I see the role of research to be critical in evaluating policies and the implementation. I also strongly believe that research enables learning from the current processes and provides us with some contextual understanding on the issues around education. Research brings policies and their implementation to their complex relational, historical, political, cultural, economical and ideological settings, and we do need to understand education in relation to all these contexts. And this kind of work, I believe, contributes to relevant policy development and implementation. From this position, I have personally studied the relevance of Tanzanian secondary education from the female students' perspective. In my work, I have explicitly taken a critical stance where I look at education policy as a process of negotiation and consultation, where the ultimate beneficiaries of policy, the students, should also be included. Through my research, I have presented how students' experiences provide complementary views to the current policy challenges and show that the students have relevant recommendations on how to improve education. My question is, why do we so seldom listen to students, and how could students' voices be heard and better utilized to improve quality of education?
Thank you. And Said?
Thank you very much. I'll talk about quality as a dynamic process, relevance, teacher preparation, equal access, and policy. And I will contextualize my talk in my country. First of all, quality to me is a dynamic process, which means it needs adjustments and transformations, and it's adaptable to new situations. What I mean by this is that quality is not something which is static. It is dynamic. It changes. What was considered as quality 50 years ago is not considered quality today. And maybe what we consider as quality education today will not be necessarily considered as quality education in the future. So quality to me is something which changes over time. Secondly, relevance of what is taught and what is learnt. To me, quality education should be responsive to the needs of a given society. What is quality education in one society is not necessarily quality education in all aspects in another society. There can be some universal aspects, but there are issues which are specific in specific societies. And basically, quality education should lead to four aspects. I'm drawing this from UNESCO's perspective, that quality education should lead to four aspects of learning: learning to know, learning to be, learning to do, and learning to live together. So quality education should enable the learners to have knowledge in terms of problem-solving skills, critical thinking skills, and so on. It should be learning to be. The learners should be able to acquire self-awareness and self-confidence. Also, quality education should lead to manual skills. The learners should be able to write, to read, ICT skills, and so on. But also, quality education should lead to learners living together. They need some skills like communication skills, they need respect, they need teamwork, they need empathy. So all that is included in quality education. But also, quality education is related to teacher preparation and the teaching profession itself. Yeah, it has been said a lot about the importance of teachers. And in my context, in my country, Tanzania, it matters very much. It's important to know who joins the teaching profession. And is teaching considered a privilege or a right? To me, it should be a privilege, not a right. So it should be education for all, but not teaching for all. What I mean by this, not everybody should teach, as it happens in my country. Now, you can teach if you have any qualification, can have a degree in sociology, in any field. So it's taken to be a profession or a job for those who have failed to get jobs in other careers. And there are people who go to teaching not as their first choice, but because they are forced by circumstances to become teachers. Yeah, so my opinion in this is that teachers should be selected. There should be good selection of teachers, not anybody. In my country, maybe it's changing now, but this has been there for quite some time. Those who go to teaching job are those who have failed to get other careers. Also, in Tanzania, we have higher students loans. Students have to get loans to get to university. So it's easier to get a loan if you choose education than other fields like law and so on. So there are students who choose to go to university to study education, not because they love teaching, not because they want to be teachers, because it's easier to get a loan. And also, because it's easy after graduation, it's not a guarantee that those who studied education in the universities, they'll be teachers. It's easier to get to other jobs with a degree in education. So they choose to study education because it's easy to get a loan, because it's easy to get to university, and because they can also cross to other fields. And lastly, I would like to link quality education to equal access. Quality education should be given to all, but it should not just be access. We should not just take children to schools. When they get to schools, they have to actively participate in the learning process. So this has something to do with teaching methods and so on. But also, after active participation, they need to achieve, and we have to consider achievement not only along academic lines, but also social lines. And finally, I would like to talk about interconnection between policy, research, and the realities. Again, I would like to contextualize my country. Recently in Zanzibar, which is part of Tanzania, in 2006, there was a new education policy which replaced Swahili, which is the local language spoken and understood by almost 100% of the population. It used to be the medium of instruction at primary level. From 2006, the new education policy introduced English, foreign language, as a medium of instruction from standard 5 to standard 6, which are the last 2 years of primary level. Now, to me, this will not lead to quality education, because it has been said a lot, and there are so many researches which have indicated that children learn better when they are taught in the language that they understand. So policies should be informed by research. Thank you.
Thank you. And Tina?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your very interesting talk. It is very easy to continue from here because you emphasize the importance of teacher education. And as a teacher educator, I see good quality teachers the very most important thing in high quality education. I would like to see all of those aspects, research, policy, and practice, as forming a triangle in which in the between is the quality, and all other aspects are supporting the high quality education. In Finland, we have a very good situation because we can choose the best of the best to become teachers. In Jyväskylä, if I remember correctly, we select less than 4% of the applicants to become class teachers, and we have this kind of very good situation, and I hope that we can keep the situation as good as it is, because in our society we have always seen the teachers as professors, as lawyers, as medical doctors, and we should keep that in mind, that we are not by doing some political decisions, that we are not, how to say, taking the carpet out of our teachers' feet, in a way. What is very important is that Finnish teacher education is research-based, and in that way we can always we can always have the idea of what is high-quality education today. As you mentioned, it something that was good yesterday maybe is not good tomorrow. And when our teachers have this kind of research mindset, they are always able to reflect their own doing, reflect their pedagogical approaches, reflect subject matters, reflect the environment in the way that they can adapt their teaching for the in a way that it supports the learning processes of each child. And this is something that is not very common in international contexts. And I hope that we can keep up this good situation. And I think all education in all levels should be research-based. For example, our university have very good situation because we see that for university lecturers it is not enough to know the subject. They also need to know the pedagogy, because if the young researchers are taught badly, they are not going to be very good researchers. I would like to hear your comments. What is high-quality education, because I think we should have some kind of common understanding what we are going, which direction we are choosing. And I think that we have very different viewpoints what is high-quality education.
We all have the consensus that education is the basis for our future, our economical and other futures. But if we make political decisions in a way that takes away the teachers' autonomy and takes away schools' and teachers' resources to do their work best, and that is something that I'm very worried about. So maybe that's something to continue.
So we move on to Hannu.
Okay. I think these three words, research, policy, and practice, are interesting, and I want to draw your attention to an example of Finnish education system development of special education. The three things happened in a row in our system. First, there was a policy of special education. Then there came a lot of research and training. And now we hope that as a result, the practices are better. We, of course, could have asked whether the research should have been in advance before the policy, but this is the position of research in this is very crucial and interesting. I agree fully with the previous speakers on the high importance of teacher education. Perhaps the one point there that I'd like to make is that I'm surprised of the contradiction between the universal agreement on the importance of teachers and then what's done, and the amount of research we have actually on the processes that happen in the classroom. So that teacher effects have not been studied to the extent that they should, knowing that how important the what teacher does in the classroom is for the quality of education. The other two points that I'd like to raise here is that I think two important international trends that are important for the quality of education, and they are the first of all the global movement towards inclusive education, and then secondly the search for evidence-based practices. Inclusive education ideas remind us that there are certain determinants of quality. I think, Said, you said most of those already, but I'll repeat them because they are important. And they are, the first of all, that students have access to school. They are present in the school, and so is the teacher. That doesn't always happen. And the second principle is participation, so that means meaningful presence in the school, and also social belonging, becoming a member of society also in the sense of social belonging. And then achievement. And I just repeat again that achievement must be seen also in other types than just knowledge and skills. It's also attitude and personality, as many of you have stated already. Then regarding the evidence-based practices, I think there's an overall search for those going on. And that casts a big challenge to research. So how can we provide evidence for practices that meaningfully can be adopted by schools and in their work towards better quality education? So meaningfully adapted is the important cue here. And the challenge for research, I think, is in two points. How can we gain a thorough understanding of the educational context and practices? And that relates to the point that we have to know the culture and other determinants of education in the research. That's really a question of validity of research, if you will. And the second question here, how can we build this strong evidence base for practices? And with this I mean that it's always important, besides knowing the unique and good practices, it's also important to know what kind of practices are very likely to work in many contexts and how, for example, at the national system level, certain practices can be scaled up to the whole system. Here, from research perspective, I just want to propose some possible solutions for this question. One is perhaps more determined efforts to do mixed methods research to get both the unique and the narrow and deep and the wide in the same study. And the other, of course, is the importance of experimental intervention research and also randomized controlled trials also in education, which are practiced in medicine research, of course. But I think there would be also important in educational research so that we can rely on the results that the evidence is strong that this practice will work.
Thank you. Can we go around once more? I assume that you do have some additional points after we have done this round, and then after that I would like to invite some questions from the audience. So who would like to continue from here now and add some points before we move on to some next questions and ask the audience? Do you have something you would like to add, Hannu?
Maybe Isaiah? I could pick up on where Hannu left with the importance of research and what kind of research should we do. Then again, how do we better utilize the research that is being done? We already have a lot of research, but it's not going to the level of policy development and improvement of practice enough. I mean, work is being done, and there are differences in between different contexts. So how do we distribute the research that we do? How do we publicize it? Where do we publish the research? Is it accessible to the people who actually need it and who would be interested to use the research? So we need to continue this dialogue and improve ways to do it on local, national, international levels.
Thank you. Hisayo.
Yes, thank you very much. I think the research has been missing in terms of lack of data, especially on excluded learners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those who are at schools, we have necessary background characteristics and so on, very easily available, or not very easily, but maybe more existent than the ones who are excluded from the schools. That's one. And then so researchers must have the perspective more from the grassroots. And then that is linked to Hannah's point also, that the students' perspectives or anybody who is excluded from in or out of the schooling and the grassroots would be very important. When it comes to learners with disabilities, for example, deaf persons usually don't have any access to mother tongue, because 90% statistically of deaf babies are born in hearing families. And it's not a self-evident thing for families with hearing parents to start to educate them in sign language. And as a result, many of them don't have any mother tongue at all in developing countries. And the few of the girls that I have seen in Ethiopia last year with visual disabilities, they got the opportunities of education only through an NGO. There was no public sector who provided them any education. But then they were kind of collected from rural areas to capital city or nearby bigger cities. And so they were taking away their own space from their families. And after graduating, many of them became beggars in those cities. So we have to have this kind of perspective to be closer to the excluded people also. And the Western research, like we do, depend on the West-centric ideas. For example, the Special Rapporteur on Torture asked us, Special Rapporteur on Disability, to write about torture experiences of persons with psychosocial disabilities, like mental disabilities, in medical settings. And then we wonder, because he's from Africa himself, and then we wonder what we can write about African persons with psychosocial disabilities who are in medical institutions are like 1% of them. Most of them have the access to traditional healers or witch doctors, but then they don't have any access to Western doctors. So we rather argue that we have to concentrate on outside of the medical setting that they have the access to, which is their reality. So what I would like to add on to the discussion is that we need kind of a global theory more than this too context-specific, which is applicable only to that very narrow context. Thank you.
Thank you. And Tina?
I think that we as researchers have sometimes forgot our responsibility to process our research information and communicate it to policymakers in a way that they can utilize it properly. If we just leave them with our 200-page thesis, it's not going to work. It's not going to change anything because they don't have that much time to read it. We need to, interpret our research results to the policymakers. And I really much like your idea of this kind of experimental interventions. I think that we should change something quite radically and see what is changing in our learning environments. Not large-scale experiments. In the beginning, quite small scale, and have the courage to do that.
And Hannu, and then Tina.
Okay, a quick comment on the policy and research. Sometimes it's a bit terrifying thought of what aspects of our findings will be translated into the minds of the policymakers, and that's really a issue that we have to discuss. How can we convey the most important things that they will be adopted as slogans for policies? But for the implementation research, I would like to say that the why I see experimental research as good is that it can also through experimental research, you actually take the schools as participants in the research. So they are the ones that are doing the activity that we run research on. And that's where we actually need the randomized control trials, because we cannot, if we want to do research in a natural environment, so that the schools function as they are, but only the experiment is added there. And this is one benefit that I see there. And then, of course, I still wanted to comment that the doing research or developing practices using students or pupils is a necessary information also for school practices as a information on how things are going in the school. And we are experimenting some models where this could actually be used in information-based decision-making. So it's much underutilized resource, the students' voices.
Tina?
Yes, thank you. I think that these questions and comments are really, really current, and I think that now, at this stage, when Finland is seen as the model of education and teacher education, and the PISA results have been this and that, and all the delegations coming here to see how we do it and so forth, I think that it's also our responsibility to work forward and to take risks as well. So that I think that might be one of the core questions now, that how to do it. Is it the Academy of Finland funding, or is it the universities themselves who are doing it? How to really put this forward, these possibilities? And on the other side also, that how could we facilitate the discussion, for example, with the policymakers? Mm-hmm. It could be our role here. Mm-hmm. We have been gathering researchers, different people from universities, from University of Applied Sciences, from business enterprises, for different kinds of roundtables. So why not here? Because this is the core of the whole ministry, I think. Not okay, the cultural people would say that's the core. But from our perspective, of course, education is the core. So we could think about this also, and I'm sure that everyone from our department would be more than happy to contribute somehow.
And I think we would be happy to invite you here again to have more discussions with us and also with our students. Any more points you would like to add here? There was this one question that Tina from the Teacher Education Department raised, was what do we mean by high quality? Would you like to ponder on that before we move and ask questions from the audience to join with questions? What is high quality, in your opinion, today?
I will skip this question because I'm not an expert. I'm expert on something totally else.
But you're willing to listen to us.
Yes, I will. I will. Yes, gladly listen. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Said, would you like to start? What do you think is high quality?
Well, I think I would kind of repeat what I said in the beginning, that the high quality would mean that then not only in schools, but then the community would change dramatically in the way that the disadvantaged people or those who are at the risk of inequality are part and parcel of the community, which then is automatically kind of reflected into the educational setting. That I would call a high quality of education.
Thank you. Said?
Not ready to say what is high quality in education. I would just emphasize that quality in education is relative. It depends in a particular society. It depends at a particular time. But if I am to say what I consider as a high quality today, I would say that it is a kind of education which considers the learner holistically. So it's not just giving him or her academic kind of education, but it considers all aspects of life, the values and all things.
Yeah. Thank you. Hanno?
Well, we could also think that high quality means that all students in school can learn to their full potential, so that this regardless of where they come from and how they are from other characteristics. And if another definition from an individual's life course perspective could be that high quality education is such that leads everybody who have gone through it to find a place, a meaningful place in a society as a citizen. So then it comes connected to the other things, as you mentioned.
Yes, Isaiah.
Can I add one thing? When we published this book, the latest book on reducing inequalities, which was about development cooperation of Finland and Ethiopia on their bilateral inclusive education project. And then we invited foreign minister as well as development minister to the book launch of the event. And they did come, which was a surprise for us.
Yes.
And they are not the persons to convince. They know that inclusiveness is the core of any development. And then we also approach those bottom people, interviewing them, like having the relevance of these issues included into the book. But then the problem that we faced as researchers was the government officials who have done the implementation of their development cooperation for ages in the same way as they did. And because they are used to the fact that the ministers would change in every government after 4 years or so, and they're used to the change of the policies. And so they nevertheless implement the development cooperation in the same way as they did before, even if the new policy would come out. And particular one government official who was also present in the book launch actually said that we took our perspective, we took disability and gender as our perspective to analyze inclusiveness. And he said that that's too narrow. Women are only half, and even persons with disabilities are only little. And then imagine today in this world, the government official who is the head of the department could say this kind of a thing. And then this is the reality that we have to kind of challenge with the evidences that we collect continuously. Thank you.
Thank you. And you are calling also for continuous dialogue, I assume. That if we say something once, it doesn't happen. And if we have the policy in place, it doesn't mean implementation. So research, this triangle that you have all, I think, mentioned and emphasized. Tina, you wanted
I want to say something very quickly. I think that this is something that we have to train the other officials, our colleagues. And I think that we need your help there. Now the Team Finland concept, I don't know how many of you know it, but it's a concept where different ministries work together for the export of Finland, because of course the financial situation, but anyhow, it's a good opportunity to inform our colleagues in different ministries about different aspects. In the Team Finland strategy, education and education export is taken as one of the leading topics. So that's the future of Finland, that we export knowledge. It doesn't go that way. We have here today. So I think that it might be a good idea to gather different researchers from your side, just like today, and invite the Team Finland officials who are working in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, in the Ministry of Employment and the Economy, in different ministries, to really to listen that what is this all about? I don't know how you feel about this, but I think that that could be our role again.
We'll work on that. I think that's a good suggestion for us, okay. In collaboration with you.
Excellent. Yes.
Note taken. So that's something we should do, actually. And I think that is a good way also that we are invited sometimes to go and talk to the policymakers, decision makers, implementers. But I think it's also good that we do invite people here to hear different views. And also then we can think how we improve when it comes to our research and also teacher education programs, leadership programs, etc. So I think we do need this sort of continuous influencing each other all the time. It doesn't happen automatically. Do you want to add something, or shall I invite questions now from the audience? Would you like to ask our panelists something? Comments, questions? So we have two on that side. And you can address one panelist, or you can address the panel as a whole, so we can invite various responses. The microphone should be just pressed on the bottom. Doesn't work.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. This is not really a question. It's more like a comment. So my name is Marianne Okkolin. I work in this university as postdoc researcher and also in the University of Free State in South Africa and with the issue of teacher education. And actually, that is the reason why I sort of thought that in addition to have this kind of policy research practice dialogue, it would be very interesting and important to bring our research findings back to the university as well. For example, I recently came back from South Africa and collected data from teacher education students who are just entering the profession. And basically all of them addressed some issues that seemed to be very critical in their education. And that is definitely something I think that I should bring back to the lecturers at the university and to those people who actually train the coming teachers. So that is a task for us as well, in addition to go to international conferences to meet our colleagues and discuss about the matters in there. It's very critical to develop our teaching processes and practices by bringing our findings back to the campus as well. So, thanks.
So things need to be brought back to the campus, yes. And the next question was on that side as well, yes.
Well, my question is about when we talk about education for all, and then in Finland society, now it's said that you are saying that education policies do not change with the change of governors or elections. So why Finland wants to change its policy to implement charges for international students? Don't you think that it is an inequality or leads to inequality?
So I invite you to... would you like Tina to respond to the last question and then others can react to the comment? Yes.
Well, I can start. This is a... just a suggestion that has been discussed a lot during the many, many years. And there are pluses and there are minuses of this suggestion. But if it's about something that, if the attractiveness of Finnish higher education education is... connected only to the free, to the tuition-free system, I think we are in the wrong track. It can't be. It must be the quality. And how can we keep up with the quality, or even we have to do a lot to strengthen it. And there we must consider different kind of opportunities, and this is one of them. The other one is, as I said already in the guidelines of the Innovation and Research Council, it was and somewhere else also, it's discussed as is the university structure at the moment. Is it good? Should there be less universities? Less universities of applied sciences? We are only 4.5 million people here. We are really facing huge changes, and we have to go along with them. And if we are going towards the tuition fee system, there will be a lot of changes then. There must be scholarships, there must be different kinds of initiatives then supporting, because the other part of the whole thing is that we need talented people here. We are so few that we are not enough to support the whole society. And when we attract, hopefully in the future also, the talents from different countries, also outside Europe, we have to offer them integration. We have to offer jobs. We have to offer them living here. So there's a lot of questions that we have to take into account. And this is one kind of approach to this discussion. And it's not an easy one.
Thank you. Does any of you want to comment on this or the other issues? No?
I would like to comment on the issue of equality, inequality. If we continue as it is, the status quo, then that means that we are enlarging unnecessarily inequality, because there are structurally some part of the population excluded from education. For example, learners with disabilities. That's really structural. All the time, every year, they are not in school. And statistically, already we know that if we start, for example, inclusive, physical, accessible, environmental school, that would require 0.5 or 1% additional costs. But if we try to construct already constructed buildings to be accessible, that would require us more money to be added on. So if we start, that would mean that we can make it easier for the future. So that is going to be the investment in the future. So that's what we can do. And another thing that I thought about the evaluation about teachers' training, for example, what we learned from this Ethiopian case in development cooperation was that the evaluation criteria of the development cooperation was done in the sense that what kind of activities were done. So there was a tick point that the training of the education of teachers were done. Yes, it was completed and many people were participating in it and so on. But then when you look at it closer, when you dig out the statistics, then you find out that most of the teachers trained on inclusive education were only men, only one or two women. Female teachers. And then what kind of teachers' education and inclusive education was done? They said that the all thing they learned was negative things about persons with disabilities. And then, therefore, I would like to suggest that the evaluation criteria wouldn't be like activity output, that what was done, but then go deeper than that and then try to see the outcome from the perspective of human rights principles, for example, participation, empowerment, accountability, transparency, and so on. Thank you.
And yes, Hannu.
Just a brief comment. I think these ideas would be good for Finnish teacher education as well.
So need to be implemented, yeah, as well and brought back to the campus as well. Any more questions from the audience? Something you would like to add? Did I see one hand here? No? not at the moment. Then what I would like to ask you is that what kind of research do we need at the moment if we think about we have good policies and we have policies that we are discussing, like under discussion we have now the student payments, the fees for students from outside the European area, economic area. But what do we need if we think about implementation of this policy or if we think about implementation of other policies? What type of research do you think we need? We think for the future or for enhancing the quality that we have today? Well, responses are welcome from the audience as well.
Yeah.
But yes, so Lisa, we start with you.
Can I
yes.
say something? I have a lot to say to you. it's a repetition again, but then the researchers with disabilities to take on board is one of the things which has helped me very much in Ethiopia and in any other countries that I have done my research work. I always had research assistants with disabilities or research colleagues with disabilities. And then when we visited one of the schools funded by the Finnish Development Corporation, ODA, money, with my research assistant who was amputated and walked with crutches, it was so obvious that he cannot get into that place which was built by the Finnish money. Mm. And it's just so evident if you take some person with disability with you. And I thought it applies also to us. I have a colleague, Finnish colleague, who is in his wheelchair in the Institute for Human Rights. And we have this academy-funded project. And it's the same. Wherever we go, we face the same problem in Finnish universities as well. And then we know that this is not accessible, this is not welcoming, and so on. And this is a very learning process for me, at least. And this is very easy for you to implement also.
Hanno?
Yeah, tough question. but what that brings to my mind is that I think we need again, research that thinks of schools as participants in the research. So that if there's a policy, how do you implement the policy? If the schools live the policy through the activities, then that's one part about the implementation of the policy. There was something else that I wanted to say, but I forgot. I'll come back
maybe,
to that.
Maybe I can get back to you and then ask you that. How would you then, if you conduct research like that, how is that research then taken back to the policymakers and the implementers? Mm. How can we make research reports accessible? How can we get the results to those who actually should know about them, maybe understand them as well? How do we enhance this type of dialogues that we need? Tiina.
Yeah, well, just taking an example, in every single ministerial delegation from Finland going anywhere in the world, all our ministers are due to take some briefing about education and research. What are the educational things? What are the research topics with this country, with this specific? And then I have to send messages to all universities, all to universities for applied sciences, to Melissa and wherever. And we are like thinking about all these things. But the ministers, they tend to read the briefings, if not before, but in the airplane when they're going there. And this is one of the very practical things, that put it very shortly, this is the message, and send it to me. Okay. And then we can put it to the briefings. But then, on the other hand, if you want to do it like more systematically, go to the FinSeal page, for example, and put your projects there. What you have in the there's an excellent info bank in the FinSeal pages. Of course, they are now in the themes of the EU CELAC themes, but you can probably put them a bit like wider. But anyway, it's a good place that there could be one place where we could also find messages to our ministers wherever they're going, or the permanent secretaries of different ministries or whatever. And they are those things that then the officials, my colleagues, tend to read them also because they have to.
So that is for us at the university and academia, I think, something to improve, that we would improve our research communication.
Absolutely.
Have very brief information about recent research findings.
Very short.
And then ideas for implementation. Yes, thank you. Tiina, and then Hannu.
Yeah, this is a very, very narrow point of view, and this is not the most important area of research. But if we want to be successful in selling or exporting our education, I think we need to do much more research on that area. What kind of practices are good? What we should actually sell? And how we can more develop education together with the other countries? Yes. I would like to see more research on that area.
So more research on collaboration also, and how we transform education through joint projects, not as taking something from ours to them, but instead of that working together.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Hannu?
My comment relates to the we need research that has funding enough to be long enough to produce conclusive results. There's so many reports, reviews, and other things done with the schools. Schools are sick with projects because there's always a new one next year. But then the problem with these projects is that nothing is left behind after the project ends. So we really, my message would be, let's concentrate on some lesser projects, but with longer time to produce conclusive evidence.
And sustainability comes into the picture there.
That's
how we ensure that some things and activities are continued without us being there as maybe interveners. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that requires some strategies. Now we'll invite one question from there. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think research focused on positive outcome or on something that really works is good as well as this research in Africa, Tanzania, where is your research?
Tanzania.
Yeah, about what made the women be successful in what they're doing, and not what are the reasons for them to drop out. To put some positive view on the research, what you can actually do, and then something like this here. I have experienced that quite nicely the last couple of months I've been here, that research isn't just reading complicated papers, but it's people having an idea and trying to put that into concrete findings. And I think it's exactly what you said, bringing the findings back to the students. And I think that's really good that we get the chance to talk to the researchers and get the idea what you want to do. I think that should be implemented even more.
Thank you. So that's a message again for us to try to sustain this kind of activities more and do more in the future, and also invite a broad array of researchers and people also from the ministry like Tiina here today. Any of you want to have more comments on these issues now? Yes, Tiina.
Just very shortly on this. I love the idea of research on this education export thing, and how we talk about it. That do we talk about export, or do we have the approach of solutions of doing together and offering some tailor-made services or something? It's also about this that we Finns really don't know how to do it, and that's why I think that many of our projects have failed, because we just think that we are the best, and that's like that. Okay, probably we are, but probably we are not. And I think that we can really, really have a mirror here. But then something still that was, I think that probably in the next discussions or somewhere, when thinking about our kind of global responsibility in this issue, I was thinking, I was talking with someone last week, and he was saying that are there kind of mentor teachers in Finland? This was a discussion that was there was a delegation from Haiti and Barbados in Finland, and we were having this talk, and they said that it might be very interesting to have this kind of teacher career going somewhere also to that direction, and I thought that yes, it might be, because the career paths are pretty limited in our structure today. So that might be something as well.
Yeah, so we get a lot of new ideas. So that means also that through collaboration, we also ourselves here in Finland, who we think we are good, but we're only good maybe here in Finland, maybe not elsewhere. But I think there's a lot to learn and new things to be brought. We still have two more questions, so very brief, please, or comments.
Thank you very much. I just want to come back to the issue of global education for all. I think we still have a lot to do concerning global education, and mostly concerned with these developing countries like Africa and Asia. I think the UNESCO have a lot to do, because I, for example, come from Cameroon. I will just give you a little experience that I had. For us to concentrate more on parental or like adult education, like educating parents and the like. Like I had an experience where in the city where I was, the community that I live, they really want to get it. They didn't have the opportunity to be educated in their early age. They really want to go to school. They really want to get education at their later age, but they didn't have this opportunity. Like I will see, like we had those. Like an adult teacher who used to come to teach every week. We used to come to teach their parents every week. We would have like more than 50 parents in a single class, and they were very eager to learn. I think we should like have more research as educators in this field of study, because starting is the parents who take care, once the parents are educated, at least give more light and future for the kids. I think we should be concentrating more on parental education. Thank you.
Parental education, yes. Thank you. A very brief comment, and then I'm going to wind up this discussion.
Okay, this is again more like a comment, but it brings together quite a lot of the aspects that has been discussed. First is the responsibility issue, and then the quality issue, and then the stakeholder issue. So, and what comes to the research that is needed. So simply in my opinion, the kind of research that is at the same time is very responsible for the stakeholders, that includes the main stakeholders that are sort of touched in the education policy formulation, or in the implementation, or through that in the assessment. So if, for example, the goal of education and training is learning, and hopefully it is the quality learning, then we should include the voices of the learners, whether they are female or male students, whether they are students with disabilities. We should also include the teachers, etc. So the kind of multi-layered research that includes all the critical stakeholders is responsible and very critical kind of research that, according to my opinion and experience, makes hopefully a difference. Thanks.
Thank you. Now, one very brief.
Said, I'm addressing this question to you. You spoke briefly about change of policy in your country, from the use of local language at lower level to English language. I know in Africa, most of our policies are not influenced by research fundings, but I'm wondering what might have influenced this change of policy in your country. What are the politicians saying about it?
Okay.
Can I ask for a very brief response, please?
Thank you very much for the question. Actually, the politicians or the Minister of Education in Zanzibar is arguing that that change of language policy is because if you begin to teach students in English at this level, it will help them later in secondary and other levels of education, because they're arguing that students find it hard at secondary and university levels to learn in English language. So they decided to introduce English language right from primary level, but only for these two subjects, mathematics and science. But to me, most teachers there find these subjects difficult. They are not comfortable with English. So it's a problem not only to the students to be taught these difficult subjects in English, but it's also a challenge to the teachers. They are not comfortable teaching these difficult subjects in English. So it's like adding a burden to them. Even teaching these subjects in the local language, Swahili, is a challenge to them, and now you're adding another burden of using a foreign language to teach these two subjects. Thank you.
And we can certainly use that as a good example for where we do need research, because this may be against all the research evidence available. So I think we do need research, but we also do need this kind of dialogue that we've had today, and we have promised that we will continue. I know you have many questions. Many of our presenters will be in the theme groups in this afternoon, which start already 2:30. So I'm sorry I have to close the discussion here now, but I have promised already, or we at least we have agreed with Tina from the Ministry of Education and Culture, that we will continue. So our plan is to continue, because I think having regular dialogue would be very nice, that we bring in research and researchers with different perspectives and continue discussion on these important things. And one announcement before you move. I first would like to suggest that our visitors, those who have time before going to the theme groups, please visit the Dark Café. We have Pime Café in room 127 in this building, and it is a completely dark café, and according to the student feedbacks from each year, it's an amazing experience. If you want to experience something very different in your life, be guided by people with visual impairment in a café which is totally dark. You are given instructions there in front of the room. All of you do find time to go there. It's open until 6 o'clock today. So we have different theme groups starting 2:30. So you have a little break in between, and you can move to different buildings. We have our student assistants here available wearing these T-shirts, and they can guide you and help you to find the rooms. So please join the groups, choose the group you like, and then after that, or if you choose, you can go directly also, but after the theme groups, you still have time to go to the Dark Café. I do recommend. Thank you.